The advent of artificial intelligence, the deployment of renewable energy, and the rise of new technologies like utility-scale battery storage are all macro trends that stand to deeply reshape the electric grids of the world, and soon. But there is another, less talked-about source of demand poised to do the same: electric vehicles. It's a sector that forward-thinking infrastructure investors have been keeping their eyes on. In this episode, we'll sit down with Benjamin Bygott-Webb, a managing director at EQT, and Gremory Ramek, head of North American infrastructure at Fitch Ratings, to explore the investment opportunities that the electric vehicle revolution offers infrastructure investors, both direct and indirect, as well as how those investments may impact the already precarious electric grid. I'm Isabel O'Brien with Infrastructure Investor, and this is Spotlight. According to a 2023 report by Goldman Sachs, electric vehicles are projected to be half of all global car sales by 2035 and comprise 100% of car sales in the EU, as well as 85% of sales in the US by 2040. As such, the power demand they place on the grid is also expected to surge, with the US Drive Partnership, a research program duly run by the Department of Energy in the private sector, estimating that an additional 15 to 27 terawatt hours of annual new power generation will be needed in the U.S. alone by 2050 to meet this projected EV power demand. Logically, infrastructure investors have started to throw their capital into the EV charging ring.
The requirement for investment and investing capital into the space is ginormous, and that's across the whole value chain. There's pockets of capital for all different areas here. And if you're thinking about infrastructure, one place where infrastructure maybe hasn't been as dynamic is backing growth.
That's Benjamin Bygott-Webb.
I'm a managing director at EQT Infrastructure, based in London, and I look after one of our EV charging businesses called Instavolt.
Instavolt is a UK-based destination charging developer. EQT also has an investment in Volterra, a fleet electrification platform in the US.
So an issue we faced with looking at the energy transition through our value add strategy is it's a tricky thesis to play. So a lot of the businesses that are the most exciting are either too small for us, or the structure doesn't work, or the risk returns don't work at this stage. Yet very quickly, they can come quite core infrastructure in a very quick space of time.
But obviously, EQT has seen EV charging de-risked enough to have related assets currently included in their infrastructure portfolio.
We spent 4 years looking at the space. We found it very difficult to find the right asset. Either there was issues with the structure of the process or it was too early stage. We couldn't get comfort with that kind of downside protection that is so critical for how we look at businesses. I think with destination charging, this became a more interesting space for us to look to invest in. We've invested in three companies across the UK. So one is Encyclist, which is a large energy from waste platform. The other is Instavolt, the largest EV destination high-speed charging platform in the UK. And then more recently, we've acquired a grid-scale battery and flexible generation platform called Statera.
So what exactly was EQT looking for in terms of de-risking?
I think if you take a step back on destination charging, this is why I think we'll see more infrastructure money coming into the sector. It's quite a simple business model. I mean, you've got to take a bet of kind of three key assumptions, which is your number of chargers and the rollout. It's your utilization rate and then kind of your power margin on it. When it comes to that number of charges, you can get quite a lot of visibility of which are your kind of partners. We spend a lot of time looking at each of our sites. And I think the one really key important part to take about is having the right sites is absolutely key and critical. So, you know, in terms of what's the right country to invest in, you know, what are the right dynamics? For me, it's what are your partners? What are your sites you're investing? What have you got a contractor position to actually roll out on? And I'd much rather go into a country where a lot of the key sites haven't been taken by competitors, where you still have that opportunity to get those key sites up and down kind of road networks versus, say, a larger kind of more developed country with kind of a, maybe a more significant market opportunity. And then kind of the third assumption on the power margin. I think right now, this is a place that this whole sector needs to evolve in. But, you know, at the moment, you're kind of changing your price not very often. You have a kind of set price, and then obviously you have an input price of power. So matching your kind of risk on the supply side versus your kind of customer intake, it needs to improve.
And improvement in customer intake won't be uniform across markets. For starters, there will be a rural-urban divide.
We expect to see them start more in the urban areas, right? That's where the bigger demand is currently, because they tend to be viewed as shorter distance vehicles compared to standard internal combustion vehicles. So we expect to see that demand focused on larger urban areas.
That's Gregory Ramek.
I manage the US, the North America team for infrastructure and project finance ratings from Fitch.
He also expects to see geographic trade-offs.
EVs don't work as well in colder climates. And so just by virtue of having a colder winter, I think the northern climates will be much slower to adopt EVs than warmer climates, where those batteries don't have to be kept warm overnight, don't lose a high percentage of their duration in colder weather. And as I mentioned, the urban areas are the quicker adopters of EVs. So around cities is where we'll see the fastest growth for them. And what we don't have right now is a cross-country network of fast charging stations where people driving a car from one end of the country to the other can be comfortable. They can accomplish that trip without running into problems. We just don't have that infrastructure, that charging infrastructure built yet.
But once we do have that infrastructure built and the demand to boot, what will happen to electric grids worldwide? Bygott Webb again.
There is a massive issue facing all grids across the world right now. Every single country you look at, there's always grid constraints. So when you're looking at our sites, you know, roughly it's about half of the capex cost should be the grid connection. But this can be hugely different depending where you're going into a place with pinch points or there isn't enough subsidy, enough power, etc. So we're constantly monitoring that. We're constantly watching that. And, you know, it's almost like a living organized, living beast as, you know, more things get invested. Suddenly some of our sites then become economical to build. But that's really the key bottleneck in destination charging. So destination charging is more about grid applications and grid backlog. And then home charging is more about the constraints on the actual distribution part of the network. You know, if everyone turned to EV today, there just isn't the infrastructure in place to be able to support that. And you will just have complete outages.
But Remek sees reason for hope.
Because EVs can be very flexible for the times at which they charge. They can very much be married up to integrated with renewable energy capacity. And you know, that's going to rely on smart charging technologies and importantly, demand response systems that can be built into our infrastructure, into our transmission and distribution networks. All these things can be developed to then help to absorb intermittent renewable energy when there's an excess that would otherwise be curtailed or stored on site or just not be able to be monetized. And so EVs provide a bit of a shock absorber. You can think of it that way in terms of overall demand. But that said, they're probably still going to be used mostly during daytime hours and charged mostly during nighttime hours. You know, as that whole industry evolves, we may see changes and there may be a lot more integration and flexibility around those charge times. But that's one reason that EVs, and especially because they're going to be coming on over an extended period of time, the transmission and distribution systems will be able to slowly build out to meet that.
Of course, as with anything that has to do with grid build out and modernization, this won't be easy.
I think that the capacity side is less of a challenge than the grid side, the distribution side. So I've already talked about the availability of charging stations, but the stations are, you know, that's the end of the line. That's the actual plug. Getting the power to those stations is the real challenge. And right now, our grid is incapable of adding millions of these things like we'll need and effectively serving those at all times of the day, more or less. So upgrades to infrastructure, grid infrastructure, I think are probably the most immediate need to accommodate the additional load from EVs. You know, this may be transformer upgrades, it might be increased T&D capacity, and certainly on the software side, on the control side, enhanced grid management, new systems that can handle these new load patterns, because, you know, the peak and off peak may not be differentiated all that much as the technology is able to match up and utilize this vast mobile battery system, essentially. That should help to bring peak and off peak differentials much closer to each other.
And of course, all of this build out will bring tremendous investment opportunities for infrastructure GPs. Bygott Webb again.
I mean, if you own a large network, then obviously they're done by kind of a regulated asset-based model. So future capex and investing capex is actually great for them because you get a return on that. I mean, one of the investments we've just done, which essentially plays on this, is we've just invested in a business called Statera that does grid-scale battery and flexible generation. This part of it is to alleviate those pinch points in the grid and to help balance the grid when they're having to balance from intermittent renewable generation, but also transporting where from the demand to supply. So I think there are opportunities for investors, but it's going to be a huge amount of capital required to go in. And, you know, is there enough in private pockets to be able to support that? Or how does that work going forward? I think will be a really interesting issue facing grid companies right now. We have a very large school bus business called First Student. Right now, it's around 40,000 school buses across the US. We are looking to electrify that fleet. And with electrifying those fleets and electrifying those bus depots comes the opportunity to start using that more as a virtual kind of balancing battery for the grid. I think it's very tough. It's very complicated and complex. It's not easy. The technology is getting better. So it's not going to suddenly kind of come overnight. This is going to be a massive impact. So I think looking at, do we need flexible generation in other places to help support the grid? I think there's still a very compelling investment argument for that. But I think, yeah, there's always upsides that you can do when you put on these businesses.
Nevertheless, the technology still needs to get there.
There is requirement for kind of regulatory support and the kind of change in the way networks operate, because, you know, they are still quite nascent in the technology. So again, an example of this, we have grid scale batteries in the UK. If you look at what's the cheapest technology for some of the periods when you have imbalance in the network, it's batteries. They become the right technology to call on and balance the grid. However, you know, do they have the software in place to know where all these batteries are, how that works, which batteries to call on? That's not there yet. It's coming. But, you know, we're a while away from having what is quite a complex software solution, even at the grids, to be able to call on the right technology. And I think that will be the same also with some of these kind of battery businesses, or kind of using more distributed battery businesses for balancing your network as well.
Ramek agrees.
These ancillary services that grid operators need to have, they can turn to this massive resource that with time, they'll be able to identify the most optimal use of that and really turn to it as a way to avoid having to cycle up and down a gas-burning power plant somewhere, or even a coal-burning power plant, right? There have to be contracts, right? There's got to be legal obligations for the grid operators to have access to those resources. There has to be willingness of the folks that own those resources to enter into those agreements. So you and I, if we buy an EV, would we want to agree that anytime I park at a given parking lot and I'm connected, that they will be able to cycle it up and down when I'm, you know, in my office, for example? Is that something I would want, not want? People may decide that they don't want to do that. But corporations, municipalities, school districts, all those places, I think, are places that could be incentivized through some kind of revenue or cost savings plans to participate in these demand response type of programs. And then to the extent that that really helps to balance the load across our transmission systems, that should help bring down the costs of power. That's the long-term view of what the power grid should be able to do. And again, if we can envision it, we can build it. But it's going to take a long time, and it's going to take a lot of investment.
Lots of investment has been a common theme across infrastructure sub-asset classes, and EV charging is no different. There will be an immense need to deploy capital, but that's just the starting point. Infrastructure investors need to figure out when, where, and how to deploy it. Here's Bygott Webb again.
As those electric vehicles, that wave of electric vehicles come on, there is just going to be such a requirement to invest into this infrastructure space across that whole value chain, whether it's building, you know, kind of battery, again, not for infrastructure, but for a lot of different pools of capital, but building kind of battery factories, doing home charging, doing the destination charging. There's just such a requirement for capital to make this technology work. If you really are serious about banning the sale of kind of ICE vehicles or kind of petrol and diesel vehicles by 2030 or 2035, depending where you're looking in Europe, then, you know, the wave of EVs that will be coming into the market will be huge. And I think the real question is, are we building out the infrastructure quick enough or in the right place to be able to cope with that?
It's a question only listeners' portfolios will be able to answer. To learn more about electric vehicle infrastructure, see more of our coverage at infrastructureinvestor.com or at the links in the description. That's all for today. If you want to hear more episodes of Spotlight, you can check us out wherever you listen to podcasts or at PEI's various titles online, including infrastructureinvestor.com. For Infrastructure Investor, I'm Isabel O'Brien. Thanks for listening.